Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Ezekiel chapter 3, which I will call A Watchman for Israel. Our context is this. In the last chapter, Ezekiel has received his call. God told him to go prophesy to the exiles who were in Babylon. Ezekiel is located at the river Chebar, which is a canal that separates the Tigris and Euphrates River in the eastern end of modern Syria. And in a vision, God gives Ezekiel a scroll in the last chapter and told him to eat it. And on that scroll were written words on the front and the back, which symbolize the amount of judgment, because the scroll was filled up on the first side, so the scribe had to get on the back side and keep writing because there was so much judgment coming on Israel. And God had told Ezekiel to eat that scroll. And so that's where we are now. We begin in Ezekiel 3, verses 1 through 3. The year, by the way, is approximately 592/591. So we begin now in Ezekiel 3, verses 1 through 3. And he, that's God, said to me, that's Ezekiel, Son of man, eat what is before you, eat this scroll. Then go and speak to the house of Israel. So I opened my mouth, and he gave me the scroll to eat. Then he said to me, Son of man, eat the scroll I am giving you, and fill your stomach with it. So I ate it, and it tasted as sweet as honey in my mouth. Now in verse 1, God calls Ezekiel son of man. He had done the same thing in the last chapter, and there's speculation as to why that is. Jesus, of course, called himself the son of man. Could be that the same God who knew that Jesus was going to be the son of man, God called Ezekiel the son of man because Ezekiel is such a good type of Jesus. Ezekiel spoke to a rebellious nation, and Jesus spoke to a rebellious nation of Jews. Some people say that God gave him that title, Son of Man, to humble Ezekiel, because a man is a lowly creature, and Ezekiel is a son of a man. I prefer the former explanation, that Ezekiel is a type of Jesus. Now, God continues with his exhortations to Ezekiel from the last chapter to eat that scroll. Not literally, of course, as John Gill says, but figuratively. He's not going to be going around eating papyrus. This idea of eating, what does it mean? Well, it means to read the scroll, meditate upon it, and then digest the things that you've read. In other words, take the words of that scroll into your being, into your body, even as you take food into your body. And as food is digested and spread throughout your body, likewise, the words of that scroll will be digested by your brain and spread all the way through your body until you cannot distinguish the words from you, just like you can't distinguish the bread that you eat from you when that bread assimilates into your physical body. Now, to show you that that's what this metaphor means, we can drop down to verse 10 of this chapter, Ezekiel 3. Moreover, he, that's God, said to me, Ezekiel, Son of man, take into your heart all my words which I shall speak to you, and listen closely. Take into your heart. So it's the same idea. There are other scriptures that talk about eating things. Ezekiel 2:8, last chapter. And you, son of man, listen to what I tell you. Do not be rebellious like that rebellious house. Open your mouth and eat what I am giving you. Revelation 10:9-10. So I, that's John the Apostle, so I went to the angel and asked him to give me the little scroll. He said to me, take and eat it. It will be bitter in your stomach, but it will be sweet as honey in your mouth. Then I took the little scroll from the angel's hand and ate it. It was as sweet as honey in my mouth, but when I ate it, my stomach became bitter. In other words, it was a pleasant thing to prophesy the will of God that made it sweet in John's mouth, but then when he ate it and it got to be a part of him, all that doom and gloom and judgment, referring to the judgment that's coming on Jerusalem in AD 70, in my Orthodox Protestant opinion, all that judgment made John's stomach bitter. Now, Ezekiel didn't mention his stomach becoming bitter. He said his mouth was sweet. Well, let's talk about that. Here's what Ellicott says. The first impression made upon him, upon Ezekiel, by his prophetic call was one of delight. Such it must always be to those whose high privilege it is to bear God's message to their fellows. He does not expressly add, as St. John does in Revelation 10:10, after a similar first sensation, quote, as soon as I had eaten it, my belly was bitter. But it may easily be inferred from Ezekiel 3:14 that such was his experience also, when he went with his heavy message to a people indisposed to give ear. Well, what does Ezekiel 3:14 say that gives Ellicott the idea that this prophecy that Ezekiel ate was bitter in Ezekiel's stomach? Ezekiel 3:14, "So the Spirit lifted me up and took me away. I left in bitterness and in an angry spirit." So I think Ezekiel and John's experiences are parallel. And then, of course, there's a famous passage that John the Apostle records in his Gospel concerning Jesus in verses 53 through 58 of chapter 6. "So Jesus said to them, 'I assure you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you do not have life in yourselves. Anyone who eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day, because my flesh is real food and my blood is real drink. The one who eats my flesh and drinks my blood lives in me, and I in him. Just as the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so the one who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven. It is not like the manna your fathers ate, and they died. The one who eats this bread will live forever.'" So there's an extended metaphor about eating. We eat Jesus, drink his blood. Of course, not physically. We're not cannibals. The metaphor means take Jesus into your life, and you will be in him and he in you. "The one who eats my flesh and drinks my blood lives in me and I in him." Total union with Christ, and Christ in union with us. That's what eating means. So we continue now to Ezekiel chapter 3, verses 4 through 9. "He," that's Yahweh, "then said to me, 'Ezekiel, son of man, go now to the house of Israel and speak my words to them. You are not being sent to a people of obscure speech and difficult language, but to the house of Israel, not to many peoples of obscure speech and difficult language whose words you cannot understand. Surely if I had sent you to them, they would have listened to you. But the house of Israel is not willing to listen to you, because they are not willing to listen to me, for the whole house of Israel is hardened and obstinate. But I will make you as unyielding and hardened as they are. I will make your forehead like the hardest stone, harder than flint. Do not be afraid of them or terrified by them, though they are a rebellious house.'" So God says in verse 6, "Surely if I had sent you, Ezekiel, to them, they would have listened to you." Even though Ezekiel would have been speaking in a foreign language, he's talking in verse 6 not of Ezekiel going to the Jews, but God is speaking hypothetically and says, "If I had sent you, Ezekiel, to many peoples of obscure speech, foreigners, they would have listened, even though they couldn't understand Hebrew." Contrast that with the blockheaded Israelites who can understand Hebrew, but who won't listen to what the Hebrew is saying. They're hardened and obstinate, as Gill says. They had a whore's forehead and impudent face. They could not blush and be ashamed, and hearts of stone like a rock, and harder than the nether millstone, the lower millstone, on which no impressions could be made by all the admonitions and reproofs given them. So Ezekiel was dealing with some hard-hearted folks, but God's going to make Ezekiel just as hard. The word Ezekiel, as a matter of fact, means one strengthened by God, so he can take the heat. It was a terrible job, very difficult job being a prophet, but somebody had to do it. I do not think a prophet's life was very happy. To do the will of God in these circumstances took a lot of guts. And God is stiffening up Ezekiel's resolve here. Don't be afraid of them. Don't be terrified by them. I'm going to make you hard as flint. I'm going to give you the fortitude to get through the bad experience. We go now to Ezekiel 3, verses 10 through 14. "And he," that Yahweh, "said to me, 'Ezekiel, son of man, listen carefully and take to heart all the words I speak to you. Go now to your countrymen in exile and speak to them. Say to them, this is what the Sovereign Lord says, whether they listen or fail to listen. Then the Spirit lifted me up, and I heard behind me a loud rumbling sound. May the glory of the Lord be praised in his dwelling place. The sound of the wings of the living creatures brushing against each other, and the sound of the wheels beside them, a loud rumbling sound. The Spirit then lifted me up and took me away, and I went in bitterness and in the anger of my spirit, with the strong hand of the Lord upon me. I came to the exiles who lived at Tel Abib near the Chabar River, and there, where they were living, I sat among them for 7 days, overwhelmed." In verse 11, God tells Ezekiel to go to Ezekiel's countrymen in exile. That would be the 10,000-plus exiles that had come to Babylon in 597. This is about 592/591, and of course in 586 is when it all goes down after the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians and the last exile into the country. So this is the intermediate exile that is being referred to here. God says, don't you worry about whether they listen or not listen. I want you to prophesy to them. Why would God do that? Well, so that nobody can question his justice. It's just like when you look at the stars and everybody can look at the stars. And if you look at the stars and say, nah, there's no God that put them up there. Well, you just condemned yourself. God gave a witness to you that you refused to listen to, so that nobody, as the Apostle Paul says, nobody is with excuse. Now in verse 13, there's a reference to the vision that we saw in verse 1. Let me recount that for you briefly. Ezekiel was at the river Chebar, and he saw this whirling whirlwind coming from the north. It was gleaming in the middle with brightness, lightning flashing all around. And inside, there were four living creatures at the bottom. They had their wings touching each other, the uplifted wings that caused them to fly. They were touching at the tips. They had other wings, each of them covering their bodies. They had four faces on each side. The face towards Ezekiel was the face of a man. There was also the face of a lion, ox, and on the two sides, and a face of an eagle on the back. The lion symbolized strength, the ox symbolized endurance, and the eagle symbolized swiftness and ability to see. And underneath, the four living creatures were wheels. Each living creature had two wheels under his feet, and the wheels were transverse to each other so that the wheels didn't need to directionally turn. They might have rotationally turned. And that way, with four faces and two wheels at 90-degree angles, it doesn't say 90 degrees, but we can assume that, these living creatures were able to go frontwards, backwards, left, right, and up and down. And they were doing that fast. That shows that God's purposes are executed over the surface of the earth, quickly and at his direction. Now above the four living creatures, situated in a bright blue expanse of sky, was a throne. And seated on that throne was the image of a man. A lot of commentators assume that that man is Jesus in his pre-incarnate form. And so it was an awesome vision that Ezekiel had seen. And now we get some further details of that vision in verse 13. The wings are making noise. They brushed against each other. Remember, they were touching at their tips. And now as the living creatures, I'll call them angels, when they start flapping their wings, they make a noise as they brush against each other. And the wheels, as they rotationally turned frontwards, backwards, left, right, up, and down, they made a loud rumbling sound. So this vision had audio effects. It was an audio-visual vision. In verse 14, the Spirit then lifted me up and took me away, and I went in bitterness. So Ezekiel no longer saw the vision anymore. He left in bitterness and in anger because he was upset about the stupidity of the exiles. But the strong hand of the Lord was upon him. This shows that even though God is omnipresent, sometimes he appears and manifests himself more clearly in some locations and to some people stronger than in other locations and with other people. In verse 15, Ezekiel came to the exiles who lived at Tel Abib near the Kibar River. All right, so he left wherever he was and went to a community of exiles at the Kibar River. It is speculated there that that's where the majority of the exiles were. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown so speculates. Now, it's interesting that a prophet of God who's just had a direct revelation from God would be angry about it. Well, he wasn't angry at God. He was angry at the people to whom he was instructed to prophesy. Now, when Ezekiel got to the exiles who lived at Tel Abib near the Chebar River, he sat there for 7 days. Why 7 days? Well, 7 days was the usual period for manifesting deep grief. We read in Job 2:13, then they sat on the ground with him. That's Job's false friends. Sat on the ground with him 7 days and seven nights, but no one spoke a word to him because they saw that his suffering was very intense. Seven, as I'm sure you know, is the number of perfection and maturity. It's everywhere in the Old Testament, the New Testament too, for that matter. And so the idea is Ezekiel sits down and grieves until his grief is matured. It's not going to get any worse. He's perfectly grieved. He's overwhelmed, the verse says. Now, why did Ezekiel do this? Well, one commentator said that Ezekiel was winning the confidence of the people by showing sympathy to the people, by showing that he was sorrowful for their plight, and this would win their confidence. I don't think so. That would contradict the idea that Ezekiel was silent because he was angry at their sin. He left in bitterness and anger 7 days ago. That's why he was silent. He was angry. He was disgusted, in my humble opinion. Some people don't think so. Some people think he was just trying to show his sympathy with the poor, pitiful 10,000 exiles of 597. We go now to Ezekiel 3, verses 16 through 19. At the end of 7 days, the word of the Lord came to me. Son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. So hear the word I speak and give them warning from me. When I say to a wicked man, you will surely die, and you do not warn him or speak out to dissuade him from his evil ways in order to save his life, that wicked man will die for his sin, and I will hold you accountable for his blood. But if you do warn the wicked man, and he does not turn from his wickedness or from his evil ways, he will die for his sin, but you will have saved yourself. Now this, of course, is a famous 4 verses quoted by New Testament evangelists who want to put a load of guilt on you if you don't witness. Is that guilt justified? Well, I really think we should witness at every chance we get. I'm not really sure if this is a proper application of the verse. It leaves the Christian with the impression that the reason he should witness is because God is going to strike him dead if he doesn't, rather than, I love this person. I want him to be in heaven with me when I die. That's the attitude I always take. Now, here's what Adam Clark says about the 7 days that Ezekiel has just gone through. Perhaps God kept him all this time without an immediate revelation that the bitterness and heat of spirit of which he speaks above might be subdued, and that he might speak God's words in God's own spirit. Had he gone in a better spirit, he had probably been employed in his work as soon as he had gained the place of labor. In other words, Clark says that this 7 days that Ezekiel didn't speak was a cooling off period for Ezekiel. And that's why he sat down for 7 days and didn't say anything. It's an interesting idea. We go now to Ezekiel 3, verses 20 through 23. Again, when a righteous man turns from his righteousness and does evil, and I, that's Yahweh is still speaking here, and I put a stumbling block before him, he will die. Since you did not warn him, he will die for his sin. The righteous things he did will not be remembered, and I will hold you accountable for his blood. But if you do warn the righteous man not to sin, and he does not sin, he will surely live because he took warning, and you will have saved yourself. That is a serious call to Ezekiel. That's one reason I have trouble applying this to Christians. We're not prophets like Ezekiel, to whom much has been given, much is required. Ezekiel had an incredible revelation of God. Ezekiel was taken into the throne room of God himself and was commissioned as a prophet. And so God is telling him, hey, you're a prophet, you better act like one. If you don't, blood's going to be on your hands. I'm not sure you can equate that to the experience of a 2-year-old Christian that you're trying to get to witness to somebody. Continuing with verse 22, Ezekiel begins to speak, the hand of the Lord was upon me there. And he, the Lord, said to me, get up and go out to the plain, and there I will speak to you. So I got up and went out to the plain, and the glory of the Lord was standing there, like the glory I had seen by the Chebar River, and I fell face down. In other words, Ezekiel saw the vision again. The glory of the Lord, that would be the vision of the man who was glowing, by the way, from fire upwards from the waist up and fire from the waist down. So that was glory. Glory is the public manifestation or the visible manifestation of one's excellent characteristics. We talk about an athlete's glory. Well, God's glory is like that. It shines forth where you can see it. And so Ezekiel is referring to the whirlwind vision he had in Ezekiel 1. Let's look at some of the references to this glory in our first 3 chapters, Ezekiel 1 and Ezekiel 3, and also in Ezekiel 28. Ezekiel 1, verse 28. The appearance of the brilliant light all around was like that of a rainbow in a cloud on a rainy day. This was the appearance of the form of the Lord's glory. When I saw it, I fell face down and heard a voice speaking. That appearance of the form, that's the appearance like a man. Ezekiel 3:12. The Spirit then lifted me up, and I heard a great rumbling sound behind me. Praise the glory of the Lord in his place. That's in this chapter. Ezekiel 28, verse 22. You are to say, This is what the Lord God says. Look, I am against you, Sidon, and I will display my glory within you. So part of God's glory is his judgment. Sidon was going to see the glory of the Lord, not in a positive sense, but in a negative sense. They will know that I am Yahweh when I execute judgments against her, against Sidon, and demonstrate my holiness through her. And, naturally, when Ezekiel sees all this glory of God, he falls face down. He face plants. Now, in verse 20, God says that he will put a stumbling block before the man who turns from righteousness and does evil. Why would God do that? Why would God put a stumbling block before this man? Well, because the man was being punished. He had turned from righteousness and did evil. He didn't do that because God put a stumbling block and that stumbling block caused him to do evil. No, he did evil first and then God punished him by putting a stumbling block before him. Now at the end of verse 20, God tells Ezekiel, the righteous things this righteous man did will not be remembered. Why? Because he's turned from righteousness and done evil. So you see there, this is a great verse to use against legalists who think, well, God's going to take me into his heavenly palace, his heavenly kingdom, because I did a bunch of good works. True, I did some bad things too, but the good works override the bad works. That's very Catholic. That's Catholic theology 101. No, doesn't work that way. The righteous things you do will not be remembered, and you will be held accountable. Now in verse 22, God asked Ezekiel to get up from where he was face planted, get up and go out into the plain. Why was Ezekiel told to leave and go to the plain? That really sounds like Ezekiel is to go away from civilization, if you will. He was to go into a place that was remote from observation and remote from noise, a place where the glory of God might have sufficient room to manifest itself, away from the people. As Adam Clark put it, so that the prophet might see all of the movements of the glory of God distinctly. Remember, he's seeing the vision again, the four living characters, the throne. And then after that glorious experience, he's supposed to go shut himself up into his house. Now we see the opposition of the people expressed in verse 25, and you, son of man, they will tie with ropes. Now, Jameson Fawcett Brown takes that figuratively. He says that Ezekiel will be bound by the sins of the people or bound by the Babylonians, not the Israelites. No, I don't think so. I think it's literal. The people of Israel, the exiles, were tired of Ezekiel preaching that they would not get to go back to their home city of Jerusalem for a long, long time. And in fact, the city was going to be burnt down to the ground, as we'll see as we get through the book of Ezekiel. The people don't want to hear that. So they just say, okay, Ezekiel, you better shut up. Or we're going to tie you up. And they tied him up. Tied him up so he could not go out among the people because he was discouraging them by telling them the truth. Verse 26, God says to Ezekiel, I will make your tongue stick to the roof of your mouth so that you will be silent and unable to rebuke them. Now that's interesting because God has just told Ezekiel, given him a commission to go speak to this rebellious house, but now he's told to be silent. But now Ezekiel is told to be silent, but only temporarily, because in verse 27, but when I speak to you, God says, I will open your mouth and you shall say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Sort of dramatic effect. Ezekiel sits there tied up, not speaking. Whether it's figurative or literal, doesn't matter. He's not speaking. Then all of a sudden, boom, this is what I'm saying to you people. You better listen. Whoever will listen, let him listen. Whoever will refuse, let him refuse. Ezekiel understands. God understands that there are going to be some people in there that are just hard-hearted and are not going to listen. But nonetheless, they are going to hear. That reminds me of how Jesus always says, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. He who does not have ears to hear, let him be deaf. I forgot exactly how Jesus put it, but he said that all the time when he was giving his parables. And of course, the application of that, God reveals himself everywhere to people who want to hear. But if you don't want to hear, you will not see God's revelation because he will hide it from you. He'll give you enough revelation so that when you are punished justly for your sins, you will realize, oh, I should have listened. He'll give you that kind of revelation. But after a while, if you want to get closer to him and know the God who made you and made the universe, you're not going to do that with a hard heart and the forehead of a whore, which is unable to blush for its sins. We go now to verses 24 through 27 of Ezekiel 3, and we will finish this chapter. Then the Spirit came into me and raised me to my feet. He spoke to me and said, Go shut yourself inside your house. And you, son of man, they will tie with ropes. You will be bound so that you cannot go out among the people. I will make your tongue stick to the roof of your mouth so that you will be silent and unable to rebuke them, though they are a rebellious house. But when I speak to you, I will open your mouth and you shall say to them, This is what the sovereign Lord says. Whoever will listen, let him listen. And whoever will refuse, let him refuse, for they are a rebellious house. So the Spirit, that's capital S Spirit, the Holy Spirit came into Elijah, said, Get up. Remember, he was face planted. The Spirit spoke to Ezekiel and said, Shut yourself inside your house. Well, why? Perhaps to show that the people were not fit for correction, so stay inside your house. Well, I don't know. God's just finished telling him to go speak to the people. I don't think that's a proper option. Option number two. Get inside your house so you, Ezekiel, can receive further instructions from God. Well, Ezekiel's already got a lot of instructions from God. He wasn't in his house. Shut yourself inside your house could represent emblematically the siege of Jerusalem, which is coming. Ezekiel shut. The people of Jerusalem are going to be shut in when the Babylonians come in 586. I prefer option D, option number four, to protect Ezekiel. Ezekiel went into the house so that he might be protected from angry people who didn't like what he was prophesying. We read that beginning in verse 24 as we read from 24 to 27 of Ezekiel 3. Then the Spirit came into me and raised me to my feet. He spoke to me and said, Go, shut yourself inside your house. And you, son of man, they will tie with ropes. You will be bound so that you cannot go out among the people. I will make your tongue stick to the roof of your mouth so that you will be silent and unable to rebuke them, though they are a rebellious house. But when I speak to you, I will open your mouth and you shall say to them, This is what the sovereign Lord says. Whoever will listen, let him listen, and whoever will refuse, let him refuse, for they are a rebellious house. Now, why did God tell Ezekiel to shut himself up into his house? Well, here's some options. One, to show that the people were not fit for correction. Or, option number two, so Ezekiel could receive further instructions. I don't know. Ezekiel was receiving instructions on the plane, all right. I don't think that's a good option. Option number one, to show that the people were not fit for correction. I don't know about that either. Yahweh's already said that the people were fit for correction because he's going to give them a prophecy from Ezekiel. Being shut up in the house could be a symbol of the siege of Jerusalem. Even as the people of Jerusalem are shut up within the walls of the city, so Ezekiel was shut up into the walls of his house. I think that's a reasonable option. Option number four, Ezekiel was shut up to protect himself from angry people who didn't like what he was prophesying. Now in verse 25, Ezekiel is said to be tied up with ropes. That could be figuratively. Jameson Fawcett Brown says that it is figurative, that Ezekiel was bound by the sins of the people, like being bound by ropes. Or perhaps he was bound by the Babylonians figuratively. I don't know. That sounds pretty literal to me. Sounds like they're upset with him, talking about all this doom and gloom coming on their beloved home city of Jerusalem. Verse 26, I will make your tongue stick to the roof of your mouth so that you will be silent. If your tongue is stuck to the roof of your mouth, you will be silent because you can't talk. You will be unable to rebuke them. Well, now that's kind of interesting because God is sending Ezekiel to do just that, to rebuke the house of Israel, the rebellious house of Israel. Well, this is talking about temporarily. I'll make you silent and unable to rebuke them temporarily. In verse 27, but when I speak to you, I will open your mouth. On your own motion, Ezekiel, you're not going to be able to speak to them. But when I speak to you, then you can speak to them. Think of how dramatic that is. Silence. He's tied up. He's not saying anything. And all of a sudden, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Whoa, Ezekiel's speaking now. A dramatic effect. And then God tells Ezekiel, whoever will listen, let him listen. And whoever will refuse, let him refuse. For they are a rebellious house. That sounds a lot like Jesus. Whoever has ears to hear, let him hear. And whoever doesn't have ears to hear, you're not going to hear anything about my parables. And that, of course, illustrates the very important spiritual principle. If you want to know something of God, you've got to seek for him. You've got to search for him. You've got to have your ears open. If you shut your ears, not even all the stars in the sky will testify to you. And God will give witness to everybody. That's why he puts the stars in the sky. Look up there. You think there's no God that put that up there? Well, then you're an idiot. You're a condemned fool because you do not seek the God who made you and wants to have fellowship with you. It's your fault. Ladies and gentlemen, on that august note, we are finished with Ezekiel 3, and we are prepared in our next audio to go to Ezekiel 4. which I will entitle The Siege of Jerusalem Symbolized. I hope to have you around to listen to that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.